Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is Congressman Austin Scott, Chairman of the House Ag Subcommittee on General Farm Commodities, Risk Management, and Credit. But first, here's this week's headlines. Producers are feeling more optimistic about the agricultural economy for the second month in a row. The most recent ag economy barometer was up 4% from last month and 12% from last year. Farmers say their operations are improving financially. But some top concerns for next year include higher input costs, rising interest rates, and lower crop and livestock prices. A new report from the American Farm Bureau Federation says H-2A workers are in line for a raise next year. Increases could be as high as 7% in some states because of an increase in the adverse effect wage rate. California farm workers are set to have the highest wage in the country in 2024 at $19.75 per hour. And finally, the Government Accountability Office rolled out a report suggesting some cost-cutting measures for crop insurance. The report suggests lawmakers could save hundreds of millions of dollars each year by reducing the returns of crop insurance companies. GAO suggested another $15 million per year could be saved by reducing premium subsidies. Several crop insurance industry groups released a joint statement arguing the report is fraught with recommendations that would dismantle the federal crop insurance program. They say some of those recommendations would reduce enrollment and ultimately harm the program. The report has already added new fuel to the fire for those who want to pursue big crop insurance changes in the upcoming farm bill. House Ag Committee member and Georgia Republican Austin Scott says he's already concerned about the state of producer supports headed into the Farm Bill reauthorization.
Our challenge, as you know, is that now, you know, SNAP benefits are taking up 80% of total Farm Bill spending. And so that creates significant constraints on what we can do for production agriculture. You've got production ag, you've got conservation, you've got a lot of other things that now have to come out of 20% instead of 40% of total Farm Bill spending. And so one of the things that has been controversial, might not be the right way to put it, but the most controversial in the past has been whether or not we should split the production ag side from the safety net side, from the SNAP side. And I will tell you, if we don't, and all provisions would need to be made permanent law first, but if we don't, you know, after we write this farm bill, as we go into the next one, I would expect that SNAP would then take up 82, 83, 84%. And then we're going to be splitting, you know, whatever's left among production ag, conservation, and the other things that are in the farm bill.
It seems as if every time we have a farm bill debate, sort of that to split or not to split debate is part of it. I guess as we sit here right now in December of 23, knowing that farm bill conversations are going to continue happening in 24, where do you sit on that subject?
Well, I think that the first thing you would need to do is to make all aspects of Title I permanent law. ARC and PLC are temporary law. A SNAP is permanent law. And so if you did have a lapse in the farm bill, if you didn't have some type of extension, then what you would see is significant changes to the risk mitigation tools of ARC and PLC, and you wouldn't see any changes to SNAP benefits. And so one of the things that we have the most difficult time with is when outside groups who proclaim to be conservative start putting out scorecards and statements and other things that are contrary to the interest of production agriculture. And a lot of the claims that they make in that are false.
Well, oftentimes folks will make the argument that coupling these two policies together pulls Democratic support for farm programs, pulls GOP support for nutrition programs, and perhaps bifurcating the two would make it a lot more difficult to pass either. Could you pass farm programs with GOP only support, given the fact that, you know, you mentioned some of those very conservative groups end up scoring some of these issues? Or would farm programs be able to be passed, be changed, be reauthorized in an environment like that?
Well, I think that in the past, having them coupled together probably worked in the best interest of both parties, or both both segments, those who are advocating predominantly for SNAP and those who are advocating for production agriculture. In today's day and time and the political climate that we're in, I don't think that it works for us going forward. That's my opinion. Other people have different opinions on that. You have the potential to lose more support, I think, by keeping them together at this stage than if you actually separated them into smaller pieces of legislation. And I will tell you, one of the other aspects of that is I think we should really be doing this every 2 years instead of every five at this stage, simply because of how fast things are changing. I mean, nobody 24 months ago would have predicted that the input costs would be as high as they are today.
We'll have more from Congressman Austin Scott right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. Congressman Austin Scott says his conversations with producers headed into Farm Bill reauthorization make it clear to him that reference prices are due for an increase.
I think nationwide, the primary thing that we hear from producers is reference prices. That the current reference price for the majority of our commodities does not reflect the increased cost of farming today. And so if the reference price is not going to reflect the increased cost of farming, then you really don't have the stop loss that our producers need. And I'm not for anything that guarantees a profit. I'm not for anything that guarantees a profit. That's bad for good farmers, and good farmers know it. But if reference prices don't move, then they effectively provide no stop loss assistance for our farm families at this stage. And so if you carry that forward a few years and you lose, this gets a little complex in the government budget things, if you lose that baseline, then you lose that funding going forward anyway. If you don't get the increased reference price and you lose that baseline, then ARC and PLC would effectively go away as you wrote the next farm bill. And then you're talking about base acres not mattering at all.
So I want to double back quickly on the reference price point that you mentioned. Is that going to be something where you might be able to get away with targeted reference price increases on certain commodities? Or do you think politically, to move a bill and address regional differences, you're going to need to pursue reference price increases across the board for all commodities?
Well, I think it needs to be fair. You wouldn't want to penalize one commodity and reward another. And so the question is, how do you calculate the Olympic average, and what should the cap on the Olympic average be as you push forward? I hope if you're watching this that you haven't been buying crop insurance, that you take a very serious look at crop insurance as we push forward into the next year. If you are buying crop insurance, I hope you look at the levels of insurance that you're buying, the increased input costs. And I don't pretend to tell anybody watching this how to run their operation. They know their operation better than I do. But I do worry that if we get into a recession in the next year, that you could see a commodity collapse, a price collapse. And that's got the potential to be devastating for our producers if they don't have crop insurance. As we push forward, I think reference prices have got to reflect the increased cost of production agriculture. Now, that has a cost to it. It has a budget cost to it. And, unfortunately, we're having a hard time with CBO and them giving us different numbers than our ag economists are from some of our great ag institutions.
I want to wrap up here by kind of zooming out and looking at sort of the political environment facing this farm bill more broadly, especially considering some of the Republican discussions that we saw over the future leader of the Republican Party and the House of Representatives earlier this year. I guess I'll summarize all of those thoughts by asking you this. Is Louisiana Republican Mike Johnson going to be the Speaker of the House when the next farm bill is considered?
Well, I absolutely expect he will be. I mean, I think he's... he's doing a pretty good job with what he's got to work with. I would also tell you, I think Kevin McCarthy was doing a pretty good job with what he had to work with. The challenge we have right now and that Mike has as the Republican leader, the Speaker of the House, is that we've had Kevin McCarthy announce that he's going to leave effective the end of the year. George Santos has been expelled. So now our 5-seat margin is down to 3. We have another member that's taking a job, and he's going to leave somewhere around the end of March. Now we're at 2. And so when it comes to things, whether it be the Farm Bill or the National Defense Authorization Act or FISA reauthorization, everything has got to be done in a bipartisan manner. And so what you're going to see and what we have to have some grace from the general public with here is allowing us to do a lot of small things that move the country in the right direction, and understanding that it's simply not possible to do anything big right now where you have just a select small, probably the smallest margin ever in the history of the country, where Republicans have that in the House. You got the smallest margin in the Senate possible. As we push forward through 2024, I want you to understand the members who are up here are going to be working through some very difficult waters as we try to navigate it from a political standpoint and from a budgetary standpoint, and have some patience with us as we try to get things done.
Thanks again to Congressman Austin Scott for joining us on this edition of AgriPulse Newsmakers. We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel, but first, our Quentin Slater introduces us to a new face on Capitol Hill in this week's Meet the Lawmaker.
Congressman Brad Finstad represents Minnesota's 1st District. He is a 4th-generation farmer and previously served as the state director for Minnesota's Rural Development Office. In that role, he saw firsthand the changes that could be made to improve efficiency at USDA. He says USDA's use of technology could immediately be improved.
There is a need to upgrade and up the game of the technological infrastructure at USDA. We can meet the demand of the customer in a new way. And you see it happen in the private sector all the time. So I would say the USDA needs to come up to the times of the day and to kind of up their game when it comes to servicing their customers. And part of that is understanding who their customer is.
Congressman Finstad also shares his priorities for the upcoming Farm Bill in his Meet the Lawmaker interview, which you can watch on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Quentin Slater.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Going to continue our discussion on the upcoming Farm Bill, the upcoming government funding situation, and more with our panel, joined by Jessica Shulkin with the Russell Group and Robbie Minnick with the National Cotton Council. Appreciate both of you taking the time to join us. And Robbie, I want to go to you first, because we saw this week the Government Accountability Office issuing that report on its thoughts on potential reforms to the crop insurance program. We're already seeing some folks on Capitol Hill perhaps using this as kind of fuel to the fire in their discussion. I wonder, what ultimately do you think will be the impact of this report on the broader, you know, crop insurance conversation in the upcoming Farm Bill?
I think at the end of the day, no one was necessarily surprised by the report that came out by the GAO, just because they've been putting out reports like this for, you know, about a decade now that, you know, are against private sector delivery and encouraging means testing of crop insurance, which ultimately hurts companies, it hurts the delivery to the producers. And, you know, with the means testing, that's an issue that has come up time and time again throughout different farm bills. And, you know, I think what people fail to realize is that, yeah, maybe you're affecting only a small group of producers on one end of the spectrum, But at the end of the day, it will have a ripple effect when you take out those large acre farms that a lot of times have smaller loss ratios.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Robbie, we have seen ag groups, you know, need to be mobilized before on the crop insurance battlefield. Do you think that's something that will be necessary again heading into this next farm bill, especially after some of the amendment votes that we saw on the floors of the House and Senate in the 18 bill?
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, crop insurance is a, you know, one of the tenets right there with commodity programs. Of the farm safety net for producers. It's always ranks at the very top among commodity groups of programs that are supported. And you're right, in the past, there have been major challenges to the programs, and everyone came out to talk about their importance and in that case, get those policies rolled back. And we're going to need that in the next farm bill. And I fully expect that grower organizations, lenders, landowners, crop insurance agents who are small businesses and rural communities, as well as the crop insurance companies that really work with the government and are the integral part of that public-private partnership, all coming out to support the program and make sure that it continues in its current form.
Jessica, I want to transition over to you and kind of borrow on your Appropriations Committee experience over in the Senate. Wondering, as we look at kind of the inability of the House of Representatives to move an ag funding bill, and keeping in mind that we do have kind of an upcoming January and February government shutdown set of deadlines here, what do you draw as any potential connections between that inability to move a government funding bill in the House and the need now to move some kind of farm bill legislation, be it new law or an extension here in 2024?
As you know, they were able during the last continuing resolution to get the 1-year farm bill extension added to that. So that hopefully is going to, you know, enable folks to separate those two things for the near future, and they can focus on trying to get the FY24 ag appropriations bill done before this deadline at the end of January. Time is tight. There are still a lot of outstanding questions. I think what happened in the House is a little bit unprecedented. I can't think of another time. Maybe it's happened once before where you actually had appropriations bills fail on the House floor by a pretty significant margin. And that bill looked very different when it tried to go across the House floor from the bill that came out of committee. And so there are a lot of questions about, you know, how they will deal with that going into conference, but they can't get to that point until the leaders figure out what the top line spending number is going to be. That's obviously what they're working on now. If they can get that done in the next week or so, it's going to be, you know, all pedal to the metal, trying to get everything finished before that January deadline.
We'll have more from Robbie and Jessica right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. The House has been unable to move an ag appropriations bill across the floor headed into government funding negotiations with the Senate. But Jessica Shulkin with the Russell Group says many of the House bill's provisions could still be in play.
I think certainly without getting into what the specific provisions are, I think that the House, they will likely use, I think, you know, they'll have to figure out what they're going to do with any amendments that they took on the floor. But at least what they took in rules and the bill that came out of the committee, I think they will certainly go in and try to negotiate their preferences as they would in any other conference. You know, if you remember, when you write an omnibus bill, which is likely, you know, this is going to at least, you know, have four bills into it, you're really writing a brand new piece of legislation. And so they're not, it's going to make it a little bit more complicated, but I absolutely do not think the House is going to walk away from any of its priorities because of what happened on the House floor. That would be just completely unbelievable. If you remember, the Senate actually for the past several years hasn't marked up their bills either. They've posted them on the internet and they've taken those to conference. And so there, you know, there is a little bit of this has happened on both sides.
Mm-hmm. So, Jessica, then obviously in the grand scheme of legislative days, not that many between today and January 19th and February 2nd. I'm wondering, what level of concern do you think folks should have about the possibility of a partial government shutdown?
The calendar is not in anyone's favor, but, you know, Congress tends to work best. The appropriators, I think, work very well when they are under pressure. I think it's really all going to depend upon whether or not, you know, as I said before, they can come up with a top line number. The House Freedom Caucus did come out recently and say, you know, we're able to go with the budget deal cap. So that's a good sign. But there are a lot of outstanding questions still. What are they going to do with all the different policy items? What are they going to do with the so-called side deals that really provided some additional funding? But if the leadership can get that figured out, I mean, I think if you give the committee a couple of weeks, they can certainly hammer out a conference negotiation. They've been kind of doing the pre-paperwork aspect of that now, so they'll be ready to hit the ground running and hit, you know, get into those difficult conversations in short order. I'm an optimist by nature, so I like to think that there's not going to be a government shutdown. The fact that we got the last CR done really with very, very minimal drama, I think is a good sign. And I do think that there's a good faith effort on both sides. Also keep in mind that, you know, the speaker has said he does not want to do another short-term CR. He either wants to get the bills passed or do a full year continuing resolution.
Mm-hmm. Robbie, I want to wrap up the conversation with you because we've talked about a fair amount of things in this conversation, be it a farm bill, appropriations bill, et cetera. I do wonder, as you head into 2024 and keeping the broad nature of both of those pieces of legislation in mind, if the cotton industry, you know, could get one thing, what is going to be the biggest priority, be it farm bill or appropriations bill, that the cotton industry is going to need to be pushing for here in 2024?
Yeah, I mean, obviously for us, we're very focused on both of those bills. The farm bill, you know, next year, I think getting a farm bill out the door early in the year will be key. I know that's going to be tough. There's a lot of challenges to that, but I do feel like, you know, all four corners of the House Agriculture Committee are you know, committed to that and trying to get a farm bill done next year. You know, our producers, like other commodities, are hurting, and they need a farm bill. They need that certainty, and they need to see improvements in the farm bill.
Well, 2024, just a few weeks away, already a lengthy farm policy to-do list for that upcoming year, and we'll be keeping a very close eye on that, as will Jessica and Robbie. Folks, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers, but first, our Clinton Slater walks us through new farm income figures in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
USDA's most recent farm income projections show 2023 returns finishing well below last year's record highs. This chart shows the expected declines in two categories, net farm income and net cash farm income. Net cash farm income is the green line. It's a measure of farmers' cash flow and includes cash receipts from farming, plus government payments, minus farm expenses. It's projected at just under $158 billion in 2023, a decrease of more than $49 billion. Net farm income is the blue line. It's a broader measure of profits that includes depreciation and accounts for changes in farm inventories. It's forecast at just over $151 billion in 2023, which would represent a drop of nearly $38 billion. According to the report, some of the main reasons for the decline include lower cash receipts, higher production costs, and a drop in direct government payments. Despite these numbers, both net farm income and net cash farm income are projected to be substantially higher than their 20-year averages. For AgriPulse, I'm Quentin Slater.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers, and we want to take this time to thank our Quentin Slater for joining us this fall on the AgriPulse staff. Quentin, we hope you enjoyed your time with us.
Yeah, it's been a great time. It's been a great couple months, and I've really enjoyed time here at AgriPulse.
Well, we've really enjoyed having you on staff. You've been a very valuable member of the team here since you joined us in late August. It's been great having you on board, and we hope that y'all will continue to pay attention to AgriPulse Newsmakers, despite the fact that Quentin is headed back to campus at Iowa State. We'll be back with more episodes of AgriPulse Newsmakers next week. For Hannah Pagel and Quentin Slater, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit agripulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.